as Pete's constantly said, this is just a taste. Really, the way I look at it, because we've sat in that position many, many times, is to try and demystify a lot of this stuff, to take away some of the preconceived ideas that people have about the steps. And it's not a hard thing to do, because it's just like this big mountain to climb, and it's not that big a mountain, really. It's going to take some work, and you're going to have to do some shit that you're probably not going to like, but it's not that hard. And so I guess my thing was to try and demystify it for people to go, well, hang on, I reckon I can do that. I reckon I can get through that. So I guess that's what my aim was, and to try and give you a bit of a taste of that you can, this can be done. It's not there. So we're going to look at steps 8 and 9. They sort of come in pairs, don't they? You get steps 4 and 5, then 6 and 7, and 8 and 9. And I heard an old guy say once, you know, it's prepare, then execute. Prepare, then execute. And so the big book doesn't really talk a lot about step 8. But step 8, I was taught there's a bit of preparation in step 8. We don't just fly out there and start making amends. And, you know, my experience is anything, amends is probably one of the most important steps that you need a lot of guidance with. Okay, the worst thing you're going to trust me, because I've made every mistake in that big book, I can tell, when I start making amends, and you think it's hard the first time. When you've got to go back and make amends for the mate you've made amends, it's even harder, I can tell you. So you want to try and get it right the first time. Don't go out and cause more harm. And so I think to do that, that's where step 8 really comes into it, to prepare yourself so that you're going to do this right, not make a bugger it up. And again, there's no right or wrong way, but ultimately, you know, I don't like making amends. I still don't like making amends. I do it because I have to, and my life depends upon it. So I'm very careful how I speak to people today, and because I don't want to make amends, I don't like doing it. And so I want to try and get it right the first time. So, do you want me to keep going? So step 8, the way that I was taught, okay, so we have the list. It says we've got the list. You know, me and Pete often laugh because, you know, you used to hear around AA, okay, so after the fifth step we do this sacrificial burning of the fourth step. And you can do that. But guess what? You're going to have to write it out again, because you're going to need that information for the next lot of stuff. You need it for step 6 and 7, you're going to need it for 8 and 9. So my advice is don't burn your fourth step after you do the fifth step, because you're going to need it. It's got some vital information in there. And in the harms list, you know, although it's about sex, you know, good sponsorship will tell you, you know, you probably need to add some other harms. Who did I hurt? Can not necessarily only mean sexually. You know, I've hurt a lot of people, and so, you know, you might want to add them to that harms list. It doesn't say it in there, but it's probably a good thing. You're going to save yourself a bit more writing by the time you get to steps 8 and 9. So it says that we've got the list. We made it when we took inventory, and so I have the list. And you might want to think about, I got told to sit down and pray. Is there any harm that I've caused that didn't make any of those lists, didn't make my resentment list, didn't make my fears list? You know, I think a pertinent one for me was I bashed this guy one night, just for no particular reason, just bashed him. Now, there was no resentment in connection with it, there was no fear in connection with it, I just bashed this bloke, and I feel that it just played on my mind that I really hurt this guy, you know, for no reason or other. It was just stupid, drunk and stupid. So he made the list. I don't know who he was, but it was just stuff like that that came up that didn't fit into any of those categories. So you can add that stuff, and it's important. And the funny thing, when you pray about that kind of stuff, it's marvellous what does come back into mind. It came up for me that my mum died, was dying of cancer, and I remember sitting there one day going, I freaking hate you, I wish you'd died. Now, that didn't appear on my resentment list, it didn't appear on my... It was just something that came up. You know, I feel embarrassed saying that, but that's what kind of selfish, self-centred person I was at the time. So that made the list. And so what I was taught in step 8 was to look over my inventory. I was taught to get cards. You can do what you want. I found the cards were really good, and I think there's a copy in there, the amends card. I found that to be really, really good. And all this is based on the mistakes that I made. I made cards for everybody because I'm a pragmatic kind of person. Initially I didn't, and then I start forgetting over the years who I've made amends to, who I haven't made amends to. Do I owe this one amends? Have I done that one? I can't. So if I've got cards for every person, the moment I make those amends, I screw it up and throw it in the bin, or you can do a sacrificial burning or whatever you want. I've got the cards there, so I know where I'm at. So it's, for my step 8 preparation was I looked over the list and I made cards for everyone. Now, Joe and Charlie used to talk about they broke it into columns and the nows and the maybes, and you can do that if you want. But ultimately, my sponsor says, you may as well do the freaking hard ones because you're going to have to do them sooner or later. If you get them done first, it's a bit like the thing I talked about with Danny. Get the hard ones done and the rest of them is easy, I can tell you. And so if you want to do that, you can put them into, you can categorise them and put them into, well, I reckon I can do these ones. I may do these ones. I'm never doing them ones. You can do that. It's a good exercise, but that's entirely up to you. I don't do that now. I just make cards for everyone. I name the person and I name the harm and I write out how I've harmed them and I ask those specific questions, you know, that's written there. So I name the harm and then I'm armed with it that I'm going to ask them, is there any other way that I've harmed you? Because, you know, a lot of times I'm in blackout, a lot of times in so full of myself I've harmed some people and not even realised the way I've harmed them. And it gives them a chance to express to me other ways that I've harmed, that I have harmed you. So that's on that card. And then I ask the question, how can I right this wrong? My sponsor's big on that you have to try and repair the damage. Making amends is not about saying sorry. Okay? I can throw sorry in there, but ultimately it's about saying I was wrong. How can I... How can I try and repair this damage? To amend something means to repair it, to try and fix it. And the reason I don't say sorry, and that my first attempt at amends was I just ran around and said sorry to everyone. I wonder why they're looking at me going, yeah, righto, you're going to do it again. I know you're going to do it again. Because I've said sorry my whole life and keep repeating the same behaviour over and over. So I asked that question, is there any other way? How can I make this right? I love the way that Pete's got there. You've got to shut up and listen when you ask that question. And do you need to tell me how that made you feel? So I'm giving them the chance to express to me their feelings about that stuff. Okay? And that's, in that process, that's the way that that may or may not get mended. So my preparation is that. I make cards for everyone. I keep those cards, you can put them in any order you want, I usually just pick them up off the top, but that's part of the preparation for step 9. And there's going to be some prayers for that. I need to pray for the willingness to do that, because I don't know about you guys, but I don't willingly go out and do it. I can assure you I don't go, right, I'm going to make amends today. It usually takes a lot of prayer. So the big book talks about a criteria. It says I must go there in a kind and forgiving spirit. So I have to pray for the willingness and pray to go there in a kind of forgiving spirit. It's no good me going to Peter to make amends to him if I've still got some unresolved issues, because I'm telling him I'm not going to be able to sit there and go, oh, by the way, Peter, you need to tell me how that makes you feel, and he lets fly with how it makes him feel, because you're going to leave that amends feeling more resentful than when you walked into the amends. And specifically with partners and wives, you know, I remember sitting my wife down and my sponsor said, you've got to be willing to sit there and listen when you asked her, is there any other way that I've harmed you? You have to sit there and shut up and listen. So if I'm going there in any other than fit spiritual condition, I can tell you it's going to blow up in my face. So amends takes, there's a lot of preparation before I go out and do it. When I've written that card out to that specific person, the next thing I do is I'm on the phone to sponsor. Response, this is what I'm thinking of doing, this is what I'm going to say, because often, and another thing, another, you know, there's a whole chapter on the do's and don'ts, and one of them is that their stuff's not discussed. Okay, he says it a couple of times. He says it there. He says it in that when Ebby was running through the steps, he says that, you know, that I'm not, their stuff's not discussed. I'm there to sweep my side through. I don't go. You know, I was wrong the way I treated you. Whatever I did, but I did it because you did this, or I did it because I felt this way. I'm not to justify my behaviour. And so I've written cards out thinking, yeah, that's a pretty good job there. And I ring Spots and say, yep, this is what, and tell me what you're going to say. He said, cross that bit out and add this bit. You're justifying your behaviour, because I've got to be careful with that stuff. I don't want to justify my behaviour. I don't want to bring up any of their stuff. I'm there to just ultimately look at the stuff that I've done and sweep my side of the street. This is all before I even attempt to go out and make amends. I have to get, for me, I have to prepare, then execute. Prepare, then execute. So, a couple of things. Said all the sorries, wondered why they didn't accept it, so I screwed up amends there. I screwed up amends because I went and made amends to my younger brother. Me and my wife went and made amends to my younger brother and my sister-in-law. And my wife had had a whole letter, and she's saying, this is what I'm going to say, and I'm sort of sitting there going, oh, I don't know whether you should be saying that. She's going, oh, you know, we did this because you did this, and I'm thinking, nah, probably not a good idea, but anyway, I'll go with it because I want to get free. And we sat there and made amends, and they didn't take it too kindly, because no one likes to have their defects pointed out to them. And years later, I had to go back and make him. It took 5 years before he'd accept amends off. And when we went to make amends with him, he said, hang on a minute. And he went in the room and he pulled out the letter that my missus had. So you've got to be very careful. You've got to be very careful with amends. You have to be properly armed with the facts about the stuff. And so seek advice from your sponsor. Write a card out. And the other thing I was taught to do in preparation was make an appointment. Don't just wander up to someone and say, hey, Pete, I've got an amends to make to you. Here. And bail him up in the corner and say, this is it.
It's not an ambush.
I need to give people the right to refuse. Because some people don't want to see us. Okay? And so, didn't always do that, and just lobbed up to people. And again, it didn't turn out too good, because I'm putting them on the spot. And some people are really kind when you put them on the spot and go, oh yeah, well okay, you're here now, you may as well do it. And the other thing with making an appointment and letting them know what it is about, they know why I'm there. They know why I'm there. I'm not there just making small talk and I've just called in to see you and with small talk and I'm sitting there trying to talk myself out of making amends. So if I've made the appointment, I'm coming to see you, there's stuff I need to make amends for the behaviour. They know why I'm there. And you give them the option to say no if they don't want to. And then I say to them, well, can I send you a letter? It happened with a couple of girlfriends, because some girlfriends of the past don't want to see us, and I'm not to go banging on their door and say, here I am, you know, I need to clear my conscience. It's make amends or get in contact, and give them the option to say no. It's only born out of my experience of making a lot of mistakes, guys, you know, and because I didn't read the book and I didn't follow direction. And I'm here to tell you this is one of the most important steps to where you really need to follow direction and set it up. Don't just do the work first. Get that step 8 stuff going first. And I love a guy I listened to used to say, you know, there's a distinct noise between step 8 and step 9. Because he said to the crowd, he said, how many of you are in colour and in step 9? And half the room put, yeah, I'm in step 9. He said, I would challenge that you're actually in step 8. Because there's a distinct noise, the difference between step 8 and 9, it goes like this. I'm knocking on the door. Up until then, I'm sitting in step 8, planning what it is that I need to do. So, you know, I can't mention that enough about you need to prepare. you need to prepare for step nine. Don't just go out and do it. And I heard another guy, I think it was at the Sydney Convention many, many years ago, and he told some unbelievable amends that he did, like stuff that I'd never heard of before. And at the end he said, if I've inspired you to go home now and just confess all your ills, don't. Because it's a delicate thing. What's it saying there? You know, except when to do so would harm others. And I had a good sponsor that said, Chris, you're not others. You're not others. Because there's a tendency to go, oh, that might harm me if I go and make amends to them. Sorry, that's not a get out of jail free card. Okay, you're not others. It says in there that we've got to be hard on ourselves but always considerate of others. So that's been my experience with step eight. We'll jump backwards and forwards in the book because there's lots of areas where it backs up. This is, you know, the card's not in the book. You know, making appointments not specifically in the book verbatim, but it does say we've got to gain consent. So we can point out those bits in the chapter where it does talk about, you know, we must gain consent. If it's going to affect anyone, you know, if I'm going to go on a big one for me was trying to pay back that $50,000. So I go, well, I want to do it. Who's that going to affect? It's going to affect my wife and our finances. So I have to go and check with my wife to make sure that it's... And she was fine. She goes, absolutely, I'm sick of living in financial insecurity. You need to pay that money back. Good guidance, good sponsorship. Bob says, you know, I can guarantee you most of the fears you have in your life today are unfinished amends. No, it's not. I want to argue with that, but ultimately I start to see that most of the fear I have in my life today is unfinished business that needs to be finished. You know, Jeanette said to me, you got a lot of financial insecurity. Do you owe money? Yeah. What's that got to do with the financial insecurity I've got? It's got a lot to do with it. Because the universe is a funny thing. The universe is a funny way of moving and manipulating. And, you know, the moment I started paying that money back, stuff just started to happen. Money started coming towards me. I couldn't believe it. Because, you see, I'm not giving them my money. I'm giving them their money back. It's not my money. I'm paying their money back. And the moment I prepared and started paying off all those the money that I owed people through what I'd stolen over the years from when I'd walked into shops. You know, I used to do the five-finger discount and walk out of shops. And the moment that I went back and tried to repair that stuff, financial insecurity left me. Isn't that funny? Because that don't make sense in the real world to me or my way, but in the spiritual world it makes perfect sense. You start giving back to the universe starts paying you off in lots of different ways. And so I had to learn this stuff because I was, you know, fear came up big time in the amends process and it does for everyone, but it's, I often say there's probably two brick walls in the steps. And one of them is at step four. You're either going to hit that brick wall, you're either going to go over it and do it, or you're going to turn around and go, nah, it's not for me. And the other brick wall seems to be around step eight and nine, where guys charge up to it, run into it and go, no, I'm not doing that. But it's the most freeing step. Been a lot of talk about, you know, turning our will and our life, difference between hand and over and turning our will and our life over. And so I said to a sponsor at the time, okay, I'm prepared to do that. I'll make the decision. What is my will and what is God's will? And she said, can you count? I go, yeah. She said, count from 4 to 9. I went, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. She said, do it again. I went, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. She said, steps 4 to 9 go against your will. That's God's will for you, Chris, is to do those steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It goes against your will, you're doing God's will. You'll be amazed at what will happen if you do that stuff. So I had clear-cut directions on what to do. I didn't have to try and figure out the difference between my will and what God's will was. It was to do those steps. I talked about, we'll talk about step nine now if you like. I've had some great experiences with it, I've had some pretty not so great experiences about it, but I try not to worry about it now because I've swept my side of the street. Where I mucked up with a couple with family was that I made amends. And when you go to make amends to someone, you've got to be willing to change that behaviour. You can't make amends to someone and then the behaviour continues because they're just going to go, yep, he's doing it again. So I've got to be willing to change. Again, we've talked about in the last couple of days about this is a 180 degree turn. I can't make amends for, you know, being so, I can't make amends to my wife for playing up on her or watching porn or, and then continue to do that stuff. She's going to go, you idiot, you're doing it again. Didn't you make, so I've got to be willing to change that behaviour. And I made amends to my old man, and I think I, you know, some of the behaviours that I owned, I drifted back in and I was doing it again, and I wonder why, you know, that relationship broke down again. And I'm sitting here years later thinking what went on, and I pinpointed it to that I'd made amends to him, but the behaviour continued. I didn't steal money, but I was still being selfish and having opinions and, you know, putting his girlfriend down and all this stuff that I said I wasn't going to do. And it dilutes the amends. If you continue that behaviour, it dilutes the amends. I've had other great experiences, you know, with a daughter, with a wife. My wife forgave me for my indiscretions. You know, that wife who left me when I come into AA, before I come into AA, she came back later on and then left a couple of times, then came back and then stuck with me. I was able to sit that poor woman down and own up to the shit that I'd done. And that's a hell of a thing. And, you know, she accepted that. Now, I try and put myself in her position. If someone treated me the way I treated her, I just wonder whether I would so forgivingly open my arms up and take her back into the fold. And the truth is no, because I'm a selfish, self-centered alcoholic. And so I've learned a lot through, you know, through doing the formal amends. Now, people talk about, oh, I just do the living amends. That's all good and dandy. But I have to do the formal part of the amends first before I do the living part of it. Because that's just a get-out-of-jail-free card. You know how many times I've heard that and I've used it as a couple, oh, I'll just do the living amends. I'm not going to go in front of those people. I'll just act. That's not amends. So amends with the family, you know, I had a daughter that I had a strange relationship with. I was able to sit her down and make amends and really truly mean it and own my stuff. She's crying, I'm crying, you know, and years later she finished up in Al-Anon, she came and made amends to me. You know, you can't buy that stuff. You cannot buy that stuff. I've had someone come up to me and make amends and say, you know, I'm really sorry, but I'm not sorry. And that don't feel too good, I can tell you. So I don't do that. You know, it's not, again. So I've had some great experiences. You know, you carry a really good message for Alcoholics Anonymous when you go and make amends. I worked in a hospital and I was undermining the boss and talking me on the back and doing some stuff. And, you know, when I left that job, I knew deep down inside that I needed to make amends to that manager of mine, you know, and so I rang her and said, look, before I go, there's some amends. And she goes, amends? What's that? You know, and I said, well, can I come and see you? And she said, yeah, absolutely. So I took the card in and sat there, and you feel like a bit of a dick, but, you know, and I'm reading from the card, and she broke down crying. And she said, you know, my brother's dying of alcoholism. Can I give him your number? Now, I didn't go in there to be, you know, to carry a message for Alf. I went in there to try and repair that damage and that tear in that relationship. And so, you know, I was able to, we carry a really good message for Alcoholics Anonymous. Another thing that I've heard over the years, which I believe to be quite true, is that, you know, people say, you know, we lose a lot of members because they drop off meetings or they don't do the fourth step or they don't do the fifth step, you know. And this guy talked about, you know, what he's noticed over the years is the ones that don't make it are the ones who never complete amends. They never complete their amends. And you may say, well, how do I complete my amends? Again, go back to the card system. If you keep taking the card off the top of that, pretty soon you get down to the last few cards. Now, I've got four cards left out of all the harms that I caused, and they're ex-girlfriends that I haven't been able to track down because they've changed their names. But I still keep those cards because I just want to remain willing if one day God in his wisdom wants to put those people in my path that I will have the opportunity to try and repair that damage. And so I keep those cards. It says in the step on the wall that we made direct amends to such people who are possible except when to... made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. What does all mean to you? Does it mean I do half of them and stop, or do the ones that I want to cherry pick the ones I want to cherry pick, or does all mean all? To me it means all. And so I still have four cards. They're sitting, well, they're in the caravan, right? Because you just never know, if I'm travelling in the caravan, I might run into them. And I'm always willing to try and set that right. And what are the, you know, besides the 10-step promises, nine-step promises, which, you know, in my experience, can be a trap, because it says before or halfway through, these things start to materialise, and there's a tendency to take your foot off the gas, because things start to happen, promises start to happen in your life, and they go, geez, how good's this? No, they didn't tell me it was going to be this good, and there's a tendency to stop the amends process. And you know, I'm glad I suffered enough pain and I did enough of that knot in the guts that I wanted to try and right those wrongs, try to do that stuff. Do you want to pick out some bits in the book, Peter, where it tells us, or the big book especially on the amends process gives some great guidelines, really really guidelines. You know, it talks about that the people are going to be much more impressed with the demonstration of what I'm doing. So to me that means, Bob always says, you know, your actions speak so loudly I can hardly hear you talk. It's all about actions. Once I do that formal amends, it's all about my actions after that, how I act and behave, about trying to be the best version of me that I can be, you know. I made a promise to my wife that, you know, after I made amends, that I'm going to try my darndest to be the best husband that I can be. Do I achieve that? Not all the time. Do I try and aim high? Remember we talked about we're never rendered as white as snow. I try my best to do a little bit better every day in that department. I can always improve on that. And so that's my actions are speaking loudly, you know, and especially with my wife and kids. My father didn't talk to me for 8 years, and so, you know, sponsor, what do I do to that? He said, I want you to send him a card for his birthday. I want you to send him a Christmas present, and any other special occasion, I want you to do that. And I'd like you to try and ring him at least once a month, and so, you know, I'd go, okay, I'll try, but nothing's going to happen. And so, I did the ringing. And I did the cards, and it's freaking hard to go and buy a card for someone that's not talking to you and you've got unresolved issues with them, because they're all these, like, oh, this is from your son, I love you, Dad, all this. I don't want to say that. I want to say, you old prick, why aren't you talking to me? And so I just get a plain card, happy birthday, Dad, love, Chris. That was as much as I could do. Merry Christmas, Dad. Hope you have a good one. Love, Chris. And over the years, I just kept persevering with it and persevering. I'd say to Bob, you know, he said, just keep doing it. He sort of got on my side once, which is unusual, because sponsors are never on your side. He said, geez, he must be a freaking, what did he say? His words were, he must be a vindictive bugger. But, you know, I just kept at it. I kept at it, not having any expectations on how that was going to end up. I just kept doing it. I'd ring, no answer. I'd just keep ringing. I just kept doing that. And, you know, without going into a long story, you know, that's slowly been healed. It's slowly been healed. He actually rang me before I come here on this weekend to see how I was going. Now, I can't make that happen. All I did was try and be the best version of me that I could be the best son that I could be, and do what a good son would do, regardless of whether he wasn't talking to me or not. That's what AA teaches me, to forget what the rest of the world doing. It's about my actions and how I'm acting and behaving. And, you know, some people don't want to see us. I've got to accept that. It says, what do we do, you know, if people don't want to see us? It talks about that, you know, as long as we're willing to try and set those matters straight, if they don't want to see us, we've done our bit. Couple other things I'll talk about, you know, financial stuff, because it's, you know, there's amends to people, there's the financial amends, there's the family amends. They break it into three different areas, I believe, yeah, three different areas. Finance stuff, you know, the shop I used to steal a lot of stuff from was no longer there anymore. In primary school we used to go down and steal smokes and gum and stuff like that, and I wanted to write that wrong because you heard in the last session how I got caught for stealing, so I want to be honest now. I don't want to ever go through that again, so I'm going to clean up all this stuff. And the shop's gone, so I think, beauty, I'm out, I'm done with that one. And Bob says, well, hang on a minute. You reckon you can work out how much money you reckon that was? I'm thinking, what does he care? The shop's not there anymore. Why do I have to work out how much freaking money it was? He said, just as an exercise, humour me, write down what you think you stole. Okay, so I kind of worked it out over a month. I think it might have been, you know, a couple of $100 probably. And he said, well, add another $100 to it, because I reckon you'll be erring on the side of in your favour. So add another $100 onto it. And he said, well, you know, is there a charity or something that you think that could use that money? And so I was able to donate money. So there's innumerable, they take on innumerable forms. Just because they're not there doesn't mean that I get out of doing it. Again, I want to get right with the universe. If I get right with the universe, it's got a funny way of manoeuvring things around and making things happen for me. It's just, it's uncanny. Made a lot of mistakes, tried to fix those mistakes, tried to follow directions, and pleasantly surprised how most of them did turn out.
Sensational. Loved it. Loved it. I was doing a book study one time at Manresa Hall when I was at the Triangle Group. Chris was, I think, around at that time. And there was a girl who was focused on the banner, looked at the banner and said, I can't do that. I've gone, what's that? And she's pointed to the amends steps, 8 and 9. I can't do that. And I said, sorry, whereabouts is that? And she said, there, it's on the banner. She's pointing to it, it's on the banner, it's right there. I said, yeah, where is it? And she said, it's right there. I said, the number, give me the number. She said, 8, 8, 9, it's there. I said, oh, fair enough. I said, well, that's really not where we're at today. They are numbered for a reason. Chris talked about that, you know, people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, they think, oh, well, amends, maybe I'll go and shoot out and do, and he spoke very well about what happens if that's done poorly. That they're numbered for a reason. If I go to try and make an amends before I'm properly armed with the facts about myself, before I am right with God and right with self, and I know how to handle resentments, if I try and make an amends and the amends goes badly, I don't walk out that door and become resentful and drink. He says 9 out of 10 times it goes pretty well, but there's the 1 out of 10 times the guy might throw me out of the office. He said, it's water over the dam, I've done my part. That's about the only place you'll hear in the book that we'll talk about my part. But he says, we've done my part. I know how to handle resentments if I get resentful at that point. So they're specifically numbered, and it's the first part of the book that I'm actually asked to go out into the world and the people about. Everything else is I'm trying to get right with God, I'm trying to get right with self, and this is the first two steps, or first step that I get to go out and try and get right with the world about me. It's a pivotal step in Alcoholics Anonymous insofar as in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would not be sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous, neither would any of you guys if it wasn't for amends. if I just very quickly think about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, June 10, 1935 is the day that we celebrate as Founders Day. That's the day that the co-founders got together. That's the day that the co-founders stay sober from. We had one that was already sober and one that got sober from that day onwards. But he got sober from that day onwards because on that particular day he had to do some surgery. He was in a very bad shape and he had delirium tremens, and Wilson was looking after him. They didn't think they were going to get him ready to do the surgery. Gave him a bottle of beer in that morning to try and calm down the DTs so that he could go off and do the surgery. And he went off and did the surgery. And Wilson is with Ann Smith sitting in Ardmore Avenue in Akron at Dr. Bob's house wondering, where is he? Where is he? He hasn't come home yet. Where is he? They're thinking that all of a sudden he's gone. He's had that bottle of beer that set off that allergic reaction. He's gone to the races. He's off drinking again. And Dr. Bob took hours to come home. They didn't know what was going on with him. And see, Dr. Bob was a doctor in the town and everybody knew that he was a drunk and he caused a lot of trouble, and one of the things that he couldn't do was he couldn't face those people. It was the thing that Chris said, that, you know, talking to people and why they drank and all the rest of it, you know, turned out to be unresolved events. And it was the thing that was stopping him because he just couldn't do it. And so he comes home late that night, and Ann Smith did probably what a lot of wives do. She gave him the breathalyzer test. She kissed him. Where have you been? Thinking that he was drunk. But he wasn't drunk. And what he'd been doing, he said, I've been up both sides of the street and I've made my amends. Alcoholics Anonymous started from that day because that guy stayed sober and remained sober till the day that he died. And that's why I get a chance to sit in Alcoholics Anonymous, because he did a ninth step. Because he went out and made amends. And that amends, you know, caused that to be the birth date of Alcoholics Anonymous. Chris talked about the promises, you know, there are results, promises, outcomes at the end of most of the major steps. We talked about the third step last night. We read the fifth step. I think they're really tangible. I love the 10th step. I think that the 10th step results are just game-changing, most tangible, other than having had a spiritual awakening in the 12th step, which is a promise in its own. But the ninth step promises, for whatever reason, are probably the most documented, and you know, we read it all the time. It's on cards, you know, and have a read, you know, like we read how it works for whatever reason. I'm not going to go into why that happens, but there's a bit of history behind that. I'm not going into it. But people in meetings read the 12-step promises, and they read it. And people in a meeting, if they don't really quite understand, they think, oh, geez, that can happen to me. Maybe if I go to enough meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe those things will happen through the process of osmosis, or as somebody else mentioned to me, maybe one day from osmosis. But anyway, the 9-step promises happen exactly as a consequence of what Chris said, that I'll be amazed before I'm halfway through that amends process. And those promises. So they don't happen as a consequence of any other reason other than taking actions that I don't want to take, and doing work that I don't want to do, and taking and facing those really hard, difficult things that Chris articulated so well, and go out and repair the damage done. I'm going to finish. I'm going to read the 12-step promises. I'm going to reframe them. It's cheesy. You've heard it before, maybe some haven't. When I first heard this, it took on a whole different meaning for me. And what I had to do was I had to think about when I first took a drink of alcohol, and alcohol was my friend. It was the elixir of life. It just enabled me to joy in life. That wonderful sense of ease and comfort, which was the solution that put the hook in me and got me when I first started drinking. I just want to put in front of each one of those 12 steps, I want to go back to then, when I first took a drink of alcohol, when it was my friend, and I walked through it. When I first took a drink of alcohol, I was amazed before I was halfway through. When I first took a drink of alcohol, I knew a new freedom and a new happiness. When I first took a drink of alcohol, I didn't regret the past and wished to shut the door on it. When I first took a drink of alcohol, I comprehended the word serenity and I knew peace. When I first took a drink of alcohol, no matter how far down the scale I'd gone, I could see how my experience would benefit others. When I first took a drink of alcohol, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity disappeared. When I first took a drink of alcohol, I lost interest in selfish things and gained interest in my fellows. When I first took a drink of alcohol, self-seeking slipped away. When I first took a drink of alcohol, my whole attitude and outlook towards life changed. When I first took a drink of alcohol, fear of people and of economic insecurity left me. When I first took a drink of alcohol, I intuitively knew how to handle situations which used to happen. Now, if I was to try and articulate what alcohol did for me, why I relied on it to be a solution to my problems, by paraphrasing that in front of the 12 promises, I could not do it better justice. I suddenly realised that alcohol was doing for me what I could not do for myself. He says, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled sometimes quickly, that spiritual experience, sometimes slow, but they will materialise. Now, the kicker to that whole little exercise, if you like, is that if I can get those results from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, from working the first 9 steps, and it says before I'm halfway through, hopefully like Chris said, I don't stop, I continue. But if I can get those results from working the first 9 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, why would I want to drink? You see, little bit by little bit, Alcoholics Anonymous has done slowly for me what alcohol used to do quickly. It's helped me to feel enough. It's restored me to sanity, given me the ability to see the truth. One of the most important steps, as Chris said. We're done today, guys.